Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jerry Friedman, Executive Director of the American Public Human Services Association. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Nicole Gardner. Jerry, perhaps you could elaborate on the types of public-private partnerships that your members and affiliates engage in to improve operations or outcomes. And in what areas do you think you would like to enhance or expand these types of collaborations?
Well, that's a very good question. In reality, there has always been, I think, a level of partnership between at least public human services and the private sector. Many of the actual services are provided under contract. Many of the charitable faith-based organizations have been dealing with people with needs, material needs, basic needs, other human services needs for years. So when you look at the array of vast human services networks that are out there, very often the majority of the programs are actually provided within the public private sector. However, recently there has been more and more of a movement towards privatizing some of the core functions that had traditionally been part of government. I think what we try to do best as a national association is to work with our members to make sure that they have weighed all of the factors that could consider into whether this is a good decision or not. I think the issue isn't the who's. It's more the issue of the what's and being clear about what the core competencies are. If government entities are going to be contracting, then I think they need different skill sets or need to emphasize skill sets a little differently. And I think we have a good example. 20 years ago, states ran huge data centers with state employees. In many areas, these are now run by corporate America under contract. What happened, though, in the state information technology world was that the core competencies changed. They changed to project management, contract management, automation planning, quality control. And I think the same needs to happen as we start to look at actual service delivery, that if we're going to be farming these activities out to for-profit or not-for-profit organizations, we need to be real clear about what the expectations are, managing those contracts and those projects effectively. And so I think that's the critical issue. It's not who's doing it. It's what's being done. And is it done with the eye of actually providing an improved service delivery system rather than because it seems to be the local trend?
So, Jerry, obviously you just opened the door for a discussion on the future. What do you see as some of the emerging trends in social welfare policy over, say, the next 5, 6, 7, 10 years?
Well, I think we're at a very exciting time. Again, I think the lessons that were learned from welfare reform, the demonstration that state and local governments really can manage programs effectively is continuing to evolve and continuing to grow. I see a number of different trends. I think the movement towards services integration clearly is happening in a lot of different areas. I think categorical agencies are beginning to realize that it takes a holistic approach in order to address the needs of families. I think more and more state and local governments are looking at a return on investment. You know, is this the best result that we can get for the amount of money that we are investing? And I think it kind of goes beyond just looking at a program from a cost perspective. I think we need to look at it from an outcome perspective. The continued advancement in technology throughout the entire human services system, from consumers to clients, to the way that we process mega data in this country, I think is continuing to evolve. And what I see happening are that major corporations are now investing specifically in human services applications rather than retrofitting business applications to human services. I think that there's going to be a continued movement towards consumerism. You know, there should be nothing about me without me. More and more clients are saying, and progressive human services professionals are saying, I need to involve a client in this decision in order to have the best outcome. And so there is more of a kind of an openness and a willingness to do this. And I think in many ways it could also be a cost driver, particularly in the healthcare arena. we need to have the costs of what it takes in medical care to be transparent. We need to know what they are. Consumerism can do a great deal to drive down costs. I heard Speaker Newt Gingrich talk about the airline industry, and he was talking about the combination of deregulation and the internet and things like Expedia and Priceline and all those different things have driven down the cost of air miles from 29 cents a mile down to 10. It's just a stunning thing what competition can do, and we need to start having that application in human services. I think continued partnerships and having strategic approaches and better use of data will continue to be a part of it, and obviously volunteerism. We need to rely on a community not only for the services that they provide but for the engagement. My experience is that when people become exposed to what happens in a human services agency or in a human services program or even in an institution, they become advocates for it when they begin to see what it's like. So I think that those are some of the major trends. I think the bottom line, though, to all of these things is what it has always been, and that's we have to keep the clients first. We can't lose sight of our purpose and our reason for being in the human services business in the first place, and that's because people that are at our desks are there with multitude of problems. They're in pain. They're in need. And so we can set up these elaborate systems, but we can't lose our heart. And I think that that's a lesson that's always with us. And to always acknowledge the awesome responsibility that we have in human services. I used to tell my coworkers, you know, that a keystroke on a computer can make the critical difference as to whether a child goes to bed hungry or nourished. And that's just an awesome responsibility that plays out a million times a day in this country. And we don't take credit for it. We don't talk about how often the systems work. We focus in on the failures rather than our successes. And if we're going to really change the human services industry and have it grow and thrive as a viable part of our society, we need to change the public image. We need to be able to tell that story better.
So continuing our theme of looking into the future, Jerry, from a policy perspective on some of the specific programs, you know, what's coming up for Medicaid, for TANF, for child welfare? What's going to happen over the next year or two?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball that I could say that because we're caught in competing dynamics. You know, I think that, you know, there's a growing awareness among people who pay taxes that they want to see a return on their investment. I think there's also a real acknowledgement that people do have human needs, and I think we're going to continue to strive for that perfect balance. But again, you know, I keep going back to the lessons that we learned through welfare reform about personal responsibility, about work opportunities, about empowering communities to make a difference. I think that those will continue to grow. The healthcare area, I think, is fascinating because we really are, I think, in the early stages of a transformation. I see it happening again with the Medicaid directors in this country and the role that they're playing in looking at prevention and wellness programs, and I think that that'll continue to be a part of it. I know the direction that I would like to see Congress and the next administration go, and that, again, is always to empower states, to give them flexibility, to have administrative simplicity, to keep client needs at the forefront. And I think if we do that, we can continue to have a stronger society. Again, the return on investment I think is really important. We as a human services industry need to talk about the return on investment that society does get. You know, when we think about the food stamp program, we don't think about what it infuses into an economy. It's not just that the people who are low wage are able to have better nutrition, but what does it mean for the grocers and the growers and those that transport food and how it contributes to a stronger society? Think of a society without human services, what kind of world we would have. And so we're getting a little better at telling our story. And I truly appreciate the opportunity to be on a show like this, to talk to your listeners and to tell the human services story, to share our challenges as well as some of the opportunities. And I'm just very, very grateful for this experience.
Well, we're honored to have you. In the context of the story you just told about the profound good that can be done, children being nourished, families being helped. If you were to get your aspiration realized, Congress would be proactive and positive in its treatment of human services policy and legislation going forward. How would you challenge your members to then take those things and move forward to really meet the challenge of improving service delivery and living up to the picture that you've painted so articulately?
Well, I think two things, to think holistically. how the various parts fit together to a system of care, and to secondly, keep the clients first, keep the needs of the children in this country and the families who are struggling in this country. Unfortunately, I can walk out of this nice building in downtown Washington, D.C., and before I hit the next corner, I will be able to see the failures of our society, where people who have been left out and left behind, the homeless population, who aren't afforded, for whatever reasons, the opportunity to participate in the wealth of this great country, you know, we'll always have our work to do. So those are the things that are the messages that I would give.
Jerry, it's hard not to be moved by your passion and dedication to public human services. So I'm curious, what advice could you give to someone out there who perhaps is thinking about starting a career in public service and perhaps in particular interested in working in the area of public human services?
Well, I think that the best experience really is hands-on. I always encourage people to volunteer. To spend time in public facilities, nursing homes, to talk to people who have needs, to see where their strengths and where they can contribute. I think that's the greatest thing is through the exposure. You know, we appreciate all of the courses in social work and in public policy that happen, but I think it's that hands-on experience, that personal passion that somebody can have, and the exhilaration of actually seeing somebody who has improved the quality of their lives because you've been there, because you've been working with them, because you've tutored somebody who was illiterate and now they're job ready. I mean, I just can't tell you. It's like maybe the equivalent, the public human services equivalent of hitting a Grand Slam home run in a World Series. One of the greatest things that I get to do sometimes is to go to graduation classes of public welfare agencies where they've taken people who had not been job ready. And they're out and they're ready to join the workforce or perhaps they're already working, to see the transformation in their lives. They have a client come back to them and say, thank you, you made a difference. Just one quick story. When I was a probation officer, I had a huge caseload. I didn't always – I mean, you had to kind of triage. And years after I had left this job, I received a call one night at my house. And it was from a man, and I could tell he was obviously very emotional. And he asked if I was the probation officer that had his case, you know, 5-10 years earlier. And I had to really search my memory banks, and indeed it was. And I did remember that. And what he wanted to tell me was that he was in the hospital. His wife had just given birth to his first child, a son. And that he wanted me to know, I was the second call that he made. The first was to his parents. That he would not have had that thrilling opportunity to be a parent had I not intervened in his life at an early stage when he was struggling with substance abuse. Now, I barely remembered the case, and I didn't do great casework. I gave him a choice. You go into rehab or you go to jail, you know. But obviously, it made an impact on this person. I hadn't thought of that case in years. But to get that phone call is something that just stayed with me for the rest of my life. We don't always know that we make a difference. And so that's what I would tell people, that if they want a career where they can have those kind of rewards and benefits, then human services is a place that they ought to look.
That's absolutely wonderful. Jerry, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Nicole and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service across the many years and roles that you've had in the area of public human services.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. If people want to find more about the American Public Human Services Association, I urge them to take a look at our website. It has up-to-date information on all of the legislative proposals that are happening in Congress. It's a wealth of information, and it's at www.aphsa.org.
Great. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Jerry Friedman, Executive Director of the American Public Human Services Association. My co-host has been Nicole Gardner, Vice President and Partner in IBM's Public Sector Social Services Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who can't hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.